So it's been a little while since we checked in with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for an update on all matters Beacon Hill. Hey, Tacky, nice to see you.
Hey, Joe, good to see you. It's been a little bit of while. The last couple of weeks are rather busy at the end of the legislative session, which is not quite over yet. The session's not quite over yet.
Right. That's, I guess, the biggest story is here we are in August, and one of the last votes you took was to not end, basically.
Yes, we've been talking about this in the past, about how we're going to handle a COVID-19 session. And the solution was to suspend what we call Rule 12A in the joint rules, which dictates the time of session. So as opposed to utilizing Rule 26, which would create a petition process to open special sessions, we've now suspended the end of session rule on July 31st. And we're going to set calendars at will for the remainder of the year. The Speaker's office has informed us that August will not have any formal sessions. We'll continue our 72-hour informal sessions, which is actually 11 o'clock on Monday today. The informal session is going on right now. So we should be coming back, we think, sometime September to address outside issues that are remaining on the calendar, including House committee reports, bills pending in third reading, as well as hopefully a state budget. But although I think we might be in October, given the way Congress is moving.
Right. Since last we talked, though, some things have happened, and most notably, of course, is the police reform bill, which you voted against. If you could talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Now, the police reform bill that House proposed is definitely more comprehensive than the Senate version. It does set up a regulatory structure, albeit a very odd regulatory structure. It's like to remind people, you know, I've been doing regulatory structures pretty much our whole adult life, whether assembling them or adjusting them or saying they're just not good ideas. And regretfully, this is one of those that isn't a great idea. They set up a completely civilian-run oversight system, meaning nobody of any kind of law enforcement experience in any way, shape, or form is allowed to work in this agency, nor provide a be part of the commission. And the commission's unpaid. And I'm very troubled that they would want to do a commission at all where the commissioners are unpaid people who should be doing this as their full-time work, given the severity and seriousness of it. This is a major issue, as well as no one of law enforcement experience. So if you go to any of the board of registration, whether it be electricians or hairdressers, or even go to things like the board of bar series for myself as an attorney, they're actually people that are your peers. And to be honest with you, your peers can be tougher on you than civilians or non-professionals more accurately would be on you. The boards are pretty tough on their peer group. So operating on some idea that if you're involved in that profession, you are so biased, you would not want to enforce against your peers. This is complete fiction out there. Bad people in your profession only hurts your profession. This is a complicated theory. So the idea that no one with any law enforcement experience, past experience, they don't actually have, they shouldn't be current law enforcement on working with the state, but past law enforcement should be provide some expertise. It sets up an odd structure where the police chief will oversee a training program and operational creation. It also creates a separate structure of investigations where they have actually no wiggle room to basically revoke a license. If you hit one of these target points, I believe, you will be terminated. There's no flexibility on the commission's part. It's a shall, not a may. Nor does it create alternatives for shall. Shall include other options, you know, things like that. And there's lots of talk about qualified immunity. And we could do a whole segment of qualified immunity. It is what people think. You're not immune. That's the first thing. It's called qualified immunity, not total immunity. So total immunity, in summary, is, for example, every vote I take in the legislature, the vote itself is total immunity. Same thing when a governor signs a bill into law. The governor has total immunity because otherwise we would never make a decision if we didn't make it with some assurance that we are able to make an unbiased decision. However, you know, actions outside of taking a vote is subject to lawsuits that I may take. And if it's in the course of my official duties, I can demonstrate that you receive qualified immunity. It applies to every government employee out there, and not just police officers. But I could still be sued privately. I would have to demonstrate that it's not part of my official duties. For example, if I hurt someone in my car, I could be sued, right? I mean, you know, even if it's in course of my duties, the question is it in my course of my duties? It was a reasonable course of my duties that caused that incident. So people should be under no impression you can't sue someone individually. The difference is that if you sue me individually, I have no money. People that know me have been working in my whole life, I have no assets.
Yeah.
So you sue me and you win, but if there's no assets to get, then you would get nothing anyway. The difference with qualified immunity, of course, is that it allows you to get to indemnification, which is the city and town will indemnify a person in their official duties.
Okay.
With the corporate shield. If you, you know, for example, you work here at ATV as a not-for-profit, and if you get sued yourself in a job you do, you say you're in the studio and there's a slip and fall, and they sue you. Well, they're actually suing the QATV.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's your employer, and you're working your capacity as an employee. And
okay.
You have to demonstrate you're working as a capacity. Your employer is the person sued, and the insurance company would defend based on your insurance policy. Mm-hmm. If you have an insurance policy, then obviously the agency would have to pick up the whole cost themselves. State does have indemnification with such limits. For example, at municipal level, $1 million.
Okay.
And you get lawyer's fees. And the state indemnification is only $100,000. And also, it's unique because you sue under the Civil Rights Act. So unlike other types of lawsuits, Civil Rights Act gives you the ability to get back lawyer's fees. If you're the attorney on the case, you want lawyer's fees. It's not complicated. Your client gets all the benefit of the tort claim, and then you would, on civil rights claim, or acting, and then lawyer get paid.
Right, a victory means a victory, right? You have won, it's a case.
Yeah, and the client has a ability under the Civil Rights Act to be made whole as much as possible, and the attorney is guaranteed payment. So that's why the Massachusetts Civil Rights Act is what qualified immunity is about. So that sues you on a physical injury claim, qualified immunity doesn't kick in. It's only for Massachusetts Civil Rights Act. Same thing at the federal level, too, the Federal Civil Rights Act. So it's not true immunity. So that's been a myth floating around. It's suing under the Massachusetts Civil Rights Act against any government employee for violation of the civil rights, which is actually also defined differently than the federal level, which that's a lot less. So, the House put in the word called civil immunity.
Yes.
I don't know what civil immunity is. Qualified immunity is not statutory. It's a case created, it's a case law, a term created by the court. Civil immunity is another term created by the court. You won't find it anywhere in statute. So this is a heavy learning curve for folks. And I kind of gave you the 5-minute or 3-minute summary of that the best I can. Other issues in the bill, you know, I find is that they were lax on ensuring proper representation by all parties in the special commissions. I was able to correct that through amendments. I don't like the fact that there's no look into police department environments. I was able to get an amendment in to have climate surveys, anonymous climate surveys. I think all employers should find out from their employees in an anonymous fashion what the climate's like. And we should really do that at the state level, because bad workplace creates bad stress. Bad stress creates bad employees. So I think that's a very important thing that we need to consider, you know, things like the stress, you know, impact on the job, are you doing too much, could you do more? I have answers for that. And this was rushed into a decision with very little data, really from law enforcement itself, that we really should collect. And Massachusetts has a lower rate than other states regarding police shootings. I mean, you go to the Washington Post, they have a running total of police-related deaths, whether it be justified or unjustified, just police-related deaths, up to 1,000 plus and climbing. In Massachusetts, you know, in 2019, only had 5.
Okay. So bears a question, is this a solution looking for a problem?
Well, it's definitely is a national driven issue. Right?
Okay. I mean,
we talked about this in the past with George Floyd and other incidents around the country, but it's hard to talk about incidents now in Massachusetts and the recent times. They, as you see in the protesters, they've also brought up an issue of years past regarding the wrongful shooting, the error shooting
mm-hmm.
that was several years ago now, which does these questions. This new proposal in the House bill includes having the AG investigate all deaths that are by police as a separate investigation. However, this can further jurisdictional issues of the DA's offices and so forth, and I'm discovering this bill has other jurisdictional issues with other law enforcement that I don't think they thought their way through in terms of finding the total remedy. You know, this is the need for more conversation with folks about the current operational methods before you can change how things are. So, one of the challenges associated with this is the issue of having more conversation with people that actually do this kind of work. You know, learning about conflicts of law, learning about what is going on in police departments and police training. I agree that Quincy Police is one of the better police departments, really, has a lot more experience of changing community. But if you go to a place like Lenox, totally different world, right? You know, versus Provincetown or Harwich, Dunstable versus Salem versus Andover versus Lowell versus Worcester. It's 300 plus different police forces. So everyone's different. And, like Springfield had an incident with the Department of Justice regarding two very bad police officers, not killing anyone, but severely injuring folks all over the place over there. And there's also leads to the question, how come we can't have swifter action by the police departments and the chiefs to address this disciplinary issue sooner than later? These would not be addressed in either the House or Senate police reform bill. This is a larger question and needs definitely a solution for, which I don't have an answer for either.
Yeah. What's the current status, Tacky, of the bills?
Current status is the House and Senate formed a conference committee last week. Monday late afternoon, almost night. And they've been meeting this past week. They're probably going to be meeting on and off for the month of August and try to reach a compromise between the two bills. The two bills, other than the special commissions, have almost nothing in common in terms of language.
Wow.
So this is going to be a pretty tall haul for the two sides to reach some kind of compromise.
The concerns that I've heard from folks I've spoken to in law enforcement are, one, it will deter people from getting into law enforcement in the first place, and two, it may actually make streets more dangerous because officers will think twice before intervening in a situation.
I don't know about whether how that true it is, to be honest with you. Every time we do a change in criminal justice reform, or when there was a massive mergers back in 1994, police departments and preferred jurisdictions, but it was always a claim there'd be a lot of confusion. People aren't going to show up because they don't know whose jurisdiction it is, things like that. Even the word concurrent means concurrent, which I find baffling. Why you would think you wouldn't show up for a 911? It's concurrent. So I really can't speak to that. I don't know the answer to that, to be honest with you. I mean, most of us have worked our day-to-day lives in government. We won't think about qualifying. To be perfectly frank with you, it's never come up. And like I said, it's not immunity. It only provides you immunity if you're qualified to prove that you're working in the capacity of the employer.
Mm-hmm.
So, the idea that you've been running around thinking of total immunity would have been fictional too.
Okay.
So I don't know yes or no whether that's true.
Yeah,
I've been around a couple of years, and we've changed a lot of laws in my time, both staffing and as a legislator, that does affect law enforcement. And I've seen the impact of past laws back in the early 90s before I got into government and how to deal with those after government. So who knows? I mean, civil service is another area to address, right? I mean, diversity of hires, looking at how to deal appeal processes and things like that too. So when we start changing social service, people say bad things may happen, may or may not happen. I'm not an expert in answering that question.
Interestingly, a lot of folks that I do talk to are in favor of some type of improvement or reform, if you will. They're not opposed to that. They're just concerned that it will put too much of a restriction on, say, use of force in a suicide situation, perhaps, where they could intervene and prevent a tragedy. You know, things of that nature where they would maybe not arrest somebody, but advise them strongly. Now, the concern is it might lead to more arrests, just plain out arrests.
Well, this is the issue, right? The police reform that you're talking about. These are the real issues that we should talk about that clearly was left out of the conversation in my mind. About the spur of the moment circumstances, you want the training to kick in, or they have to rely on instinct, or they make best judgment in very short periods of time. And there is an interest in statewide training to set a baseline. Right now there is a training program, but it's not a conventional police academy like in other states. We have this image, we have this police academy, we don't. You know, we do have funding from the state every so often to do so. We've tied it to car rental fees out of Logan Airport, which unfortunately, because of the current environment, there are very little car rentals.
Right.
But there are private entities and others that can provide training pursuant to state training requirements. But it really should be uniform at all levels, ensuring that all training programs are the same. So if you're a police officer in Quincy and a police officer out in Wilmington, Williamstown, you actually have at least gone through the same minimal training. Now, of course, there's more things going on. If you're in the woods, in the Berkshires, it's very different from being a coastal community. So additional training is required to address unique circumstances in your community. You know, we have a big immigrant community here, but you don't have a big immigrant community, you know, in central Mass in certain towns like Webster. So, you know, you would have to have different training and different approaches to handle different circumstances.
Okay. And would that be the municipality's responsibility to have that specialized training or the state?
Well, I would hope it would be the municipality because the state wouldn't know what to do.
Okay.
I live in Quincy. I have plenty of ideas. Doesn't mean they're good ones.
Right.
But, I mean, this is kind of part of the pay issue. And it's incumbent on the city council and the mayor and the police chief and even the supervisor and patrolman's unions to provide input about how can we make things better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Especially in the community they see every single day.
Okay. And that municipality would be responsible to pay for that training, yes?
Yes. The proposal that we have at our level creates a new bureaucracy. Which I'm not sure it's funded, a portion will be funded by marijuana, but I'm not quite sure that's sufficient. And then we do not disassemble the existing training academies. For example, the MBTA was to have its training academy in Quincy, which is actually off C Street.
Right.
We're not disassembling other training. We just want to require to be certified with the state to bring up the higher standard. Otherwise, you can't use that facility as your training center.
Okay. All right. So there, as you said, it's a long way to go, it sounds like. What do you think of the possibilities of having something finalized this year?
Well, there's definitely a political push out there to get something finalized this year. Like I said, the House and Senate bills are Gulf apart. When you look at them, there are really a lot of areas that are not same at all. But at the same time, though, I mean, the lobbying continues to be very hard from the law enforcement and fire and other public safety officials regarding whether or not the proposals make sense or doesn't make sense. It's not, again, not an issue, not the desire to do change. The problem is, what are we trying to change it? What are we trying to get to? So I suspect we won't see anything to the fall because, again, we're not having sessions in August.
Right.
And we'll see what materializes. I honestly can't tell you.
Okay. All right. Can we talk a little bit about state finances, Tacky? The governor recently said no cut in local aid to cities and towns, which surprised me.
Yeah, the city and towns have been operating under the idea of being level funded for FY20. So that's what they're looking at. And actually, since I say FY20, I just remembered that I cited the wrong date on the shootings in Massachusetts. I said 2019. I really meant 2020.
Okay.
By police-related deaths. Now I say FY20. But FY20, you know, the big thing is the education funding.
Mm-hmm.
We passed a education funding bill this year that changes the entire formula from the last time was 1990-ish. the redundancies. Because of the budget crises, it's very hard to fully fund that. Again, it's potentially $6 billion. FY20 is looking at about a $3 billion shortfall, but that's an incomplete revenue collection. People can still delay paying taxes. They're slow in getting back, particularly on some of the sales taxes. There's a lot of deferment of taxes right now into the fall for many businesses that need it. And we're not collecting penalties. So obviously that's lost revenue too on certain tax deferments. So it's a bit of a mess. I'm hoping people appreciate that, that anytime we don't collect taxes, that skews our entire figures. So FY20 figures are skewed already.
Yeah.
Because so much of it has been pushed out. But FY21, with education money, is going to go up for Quincy. We're about $28.6 million, give or take a little bit on FY20. FY21 went to $32.8 million, which is about a $4.2 million increase. A portion of that is to be dedicated to helping reopen. About $2.1 million is committed to the city of Quincy in helping reopen the schools and the new COVID world. You know, we're trying to help out in that manner. So there'll be overall Chapter 7 increase on education. We're a portion dedicated to schools. Lottery money continues to be a real question mark.
Oh, yeah.
As everyone knows. So local aid numbers on the unrestricted. So for people listening, unrestricted local aid means that you give money to the city and it's basically free money. There's no strings attached.
Right.
So we're still trying to figure that part out to some extent. Okay. I know the city's been very conservative on that number. I think it's a very smart view. Well, I think we're maintaining the FY20 levels for now, which concurs with the city idea of the budget and all communities in a similar method.
Right.
All the other funding programs that aren't already in process, I mean, grant programs have been already committed in past years have been moving forward. Anything bond money, that's a grant program, has already been moving forward. Like we passed a $200 million Chapter 90 bill, which is a road and bridge.
Oh, right, yes, yep.
So, you know, past $200 million there and state bond money for the same time of year. So for Quincy, that's about $200 million, about $1.9 million.
About the same as it's been.
Yeah, about the same as it's been last time. So at least we're able to keep the same amount despite the current fiscal situation.
Sure. Yeah.
And you know, we set some stuff in question. For example, the $18 billion bond bill, which in my lifetime I've never seen an $18 billion bond.
Is that right? Wow.
That the House had tied to several funding mechanisms, which are really impractical. And the Senate passed it with no funding mechanism to back the bond. So we don't even know if these bonds can be issued properly if there's no backing behind them, which is also construction and road work and money to state towns and state projects and MBTA and so many other things that get delayed on implementation. And obviously, if you're getting emails, don't raise taxes on us and so forth, which is pretty much good or bad times. It's the same too. It never changes.
Yeah.
But if you have no money to back these bonds, particularly in this financial crisis, it's going to be very hard to get a good bond interest rate, even though the rates are very low. And we have no way to guarantee repayment back to bond lenders. So we have dedicated revenue sources, at least to ensure that you're going to get money. That's how we funded the big dig on turnpike tolls.
Of course.
And the tolls are still paying it off.
Yeah, exactly. So, I was just going to say, we know how long that took to pay off because it's not yet.
Well, that's exactly it. And we, you know, if you're a lender, you want to ensure that you have a revenue stream to pay for it.
Right.
Most people didn't realize that government is one of the worst lending investments ever. And now you understand why with the COVID crisis. You know, even a normal recession, you would see maybe a 5 to 10% revenue reduction through no control of the state. And lenders don't like that. They like to ensure steady income at all times so they can ensure they get paid off.
Sure.
So as a result, if you look at bond ratings around the country, the bond ratings aren't very good at governmental levels. When people think, oh, you're guaranteed money, you're the feds. I'm like, no, we're not the feds. We can't borrow money to pay off our debt, which is what the feds would do. They pay some in cash and they pay some using more debt to pay off debt. in this vicious cycle on top of using some cash. So we can't do that. We can refinance, but we can't truly pay debt off.
Right. You can just kick the can down the road, essentially, right? And extend the term.
Oh, yeah. We did that in the '90s.
Yeah.
Because when interest rates, started bottoming out big time in the early 2000s, during the dot-com crisis, and that bubble burst and that recession. And there's still bonds from 10 years ago that were paying, 8% rate.
Mm-hmm.
So, the financial analysts in the treasurer's office would review whether or not it makes sense to refinance. And that they will if it creates a savings for the state regarding the long-term payments and also opening up space in the bond cap to allow us to borrow more money for projects. Not different from anybody else in many ways.
Yeah. And we talk a little bit, Tacky, about changing the state motto and the state seal and the state flag and what's happening with that.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that last time.
Yeah.
There's legislation out there that has not moved forward. It's actually got wrapped up into a bigger bill, which the language wasn't there regarding the state flag and models. I mean, again, I talked about it last time. I have to look it up. The state flag is very much, the Native American contribution to the people of Massachusetts. As I'm reminded more than a few times, Massasoit is out of North Quincy. There's a park there. One of the first first state parks in the state, one of the first ones of open space. And that's Massasoit for a reason. So I think I always consider nowadays we have a very knee-jerk reaction to everything and have to learn where things come from. And even after we learn it, maybe we should change it. But we really should take some time educating ourselves. So this stage, moving the state flag isn't going to change. Municipally, other communities, have already around the country started doing stuff at their own school district level and municipal levels to change various symbols on their flags and their seals and things like that. Mm-hmm. So desire. Again, this is to me a very localized issue and that stuff. The state should not be telling people what they can and cannot do at the municipal level. Municipalities have a degree of sovereignty in the state to tell them how to manage that type of situation. It sounds like I'm kicking the can. I am, but I mean, who's going to create the new flags? The state isn't going to tell Quincy how to create a new flag or a new symbol, right? I mean, you can't do this, but you have to be approved by us.
Yeah.
But do we want to be approving this?
Right.
Well, let the people, the community, approve it. I mean, there'd be a resentment from the local level saying, "Hey, the state has to approve our symbols." I mean, yeah, it is kicking the can, but you think about it that way. The state doesn't live with your symbols. The community does.
Well, right. And I asked the members of the school committee what they thought about, the Yaku and the Red Raiders for North Quincy. And a lot of them told me they want the school community to decide because it's their symbol.
Well, that's a big part of it. I mean, it is representation of you. If you go to alumni of that school, go to that school. And what does it really mean? There's always this educational curve. People need to learn the history of why things are. And I'm always very disappointed when people tear things down without really thinking about why they are. And some stuff really do have a bad history that needs to be addressed. Maybe there's a different way to remind people of that bad history.
Yeah.
In a better, in a different way, but still continue to be respectful of our history. At the same time, though, some stuff maybe it's time to move on to something new and fresh. And move another piece to history as a monument to something else and bringing a new monument in to reflect the world we live in. And this is the constant evolution of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike other countries in the world, it doesn't matter what country you're in, but we have more freedoms than any other to express our opinions and to share a collective opinion as well as oppose an opinion of what we all think. But at the same time, though, I think there's a need for an educational level to learn what's going on, to make a better judgment, and to be more understanding in the process of making new decisions.
Can we talk about something a little bit lighter today? It's now the month of August, which means it's August Moon Festival here in Quincy. It'll look a lot different this year, though.
This is the first time we've canceled a festival since 2003 when a tropical storm came by, and we only postponed it 1 week.
Wow.
So those who know me know I've been associated with this festival for many years, whether as organizer or participant, starting back in 96. And no joke, I mean, you know, it's my lifetime of being involved in this festival. We've only had one postponement, and that was because of a tropical storm, and it wasn't the rain, it was the wind. We're concerned the tents would go blown out to who knows where. I mean, the winds whip over 35 miles an hour, which is exceeded the tent's ability to handle it. It's a changing time, and large gatherings are still in phase four of the governor's reopening plan, which means vaccine or therapy has to be produced. Obviously, the governor can adjust those, as he has already with the various industries. I like to call it, it's like not really phase three, it's like phase three one-third, three two-thirds, you know, so forth, as we continue to adjust. So it's what, 11 a.m. to about 12:30, you know, via QATV and using other social media platforms, they can rebroadcast. And normally the August moon and the Lunar New Year, which the Lunar New Year probably isn't going to happen either in February,
right?
As well as the annual banquet dinner is a major funding source for Fujian resources. So again, you know, they continue to look for sponsors. They have a bunch of raffle prizes on the website. People want to feel like they can help out a little. There's ways to do so. And, you know, other agencies like the YMCA, which is working under restricted conditions, and the gyms, and the day programs for the kids, Georgetown Neighborhood Center, the major food pantries, QCAP, major food pantry. A lot of the in-person services are very challenging for them. Running Head Start, for example, Interfaith Social Services, Social Elder Services, obviously our community health centers, Manning and South Pole, have been working in very challenging this challenging situation, and fundraising is very hard at all.
Yes, yep.
But, you know, please do visit, you know, August Moon on the 16th at 11 a.m. Through QATV. It should be rebroadcast a few more times. And if you want to try to be helpful and help out with a couple bucks, you can go to the Fundraising Resources website and find out how to put a couple bucks on some greater enterprises.
Yeah, we're really happy here to partner up with Corey here at QATV to help get that event out to the public this year. So we look forward to that for sure. Time to talk census, Techie.
Ah, the census portion of the day.
Yes.
We continue to be ticking up ever so slowly.
Okay.
So nationally, it's about 62.8% as of yesterday. So today is August 3rd, so August 2nd, yesterday. Massachusetts is ahead of the national average of 64.9%. Quincy still lags behind the state average of 63.7%. So we're growing a little bit every week, but it's still slow. Weymouth's at 71%, Randolph's at 65.9%, Braintree's at 75.4%, Milton's at 79.5%, Coburg's at 70.1%. Now, for comparison, in Quincy in 2010 at 68.1%, so still well behind our 2010 response rate. Okay. We want to get over our 2010 response rate. But you look at Weymouth, I mean, they're 71, and 10 years ago, they were 71.7. So Braintree is at 75.4. 10 years ago, they were 74.9. So if people are saying, you know, it can't be done. Our neighboring communities have exceeded their response rate. Again, the census is already moving forward on their summer and fall help. October 31st is now the new deadline for 2020census.gov. You have to mean everybody in your household. Doesn't matter their age or citizenship status, head count and only a head count. So we will not ask for that. Again, we will not ask for personal information like social security numbers. We're not asking for bank accounts. There'll be no request for payment. If there's anybody asking for money, hang up right away. Right. That is a partial call. And actually, I found out there's actually a contact tracing scheme along those lines too. Where they're asking again for bank information, social security numbers, asking for information for payment, whether it be gift cards or cash. Absolute fraud. Mm-hmm. Do not And same thing with tax scams. July 15th was the deadline for state federal taxes. I know people have applied for extensions. So again, the tax scams are going on as well as the immigration scams. They're preying again on this new environment of anti-immigrant. I know people have strong feelings about different immigrant statuses, but at the same time though, these same people also being preyed upon by folks that claim that you would be deported. And, in Australia, actually, is an interesting scam that came up regarding scamming Chinese students into faking the whole hostage situation.
Really?
Yeah, it's actually pretty crazy in Australia. So, you know, to get their parents to give money to, yeah, to the hostage people who scare these young kids into faking a hostage situation so they can get money for it.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
All righty. Yeah. Anything else we should touch on, do you think, Tacky?
I just want to remind folks, I mean, even though the weather's hot, as you can tell by the news, warm weather doesn't stop COVID. Mm-hmm. And the economy can only move forward if we allow it to move forward. So it's essential, you know, for employees as well as customers to be mindful and quite frankly smart about wearing the mask and maintaining hygiene. If you're not feeling well, do not expose other people if you don't feel well. You know, this is an asymptomatic disease. And we've already seen in Quincy several establishments suspended and some fined for non-compliance issue. Luke Jones here is taking this extremely seriously. Mm-hmm. And Quincy had a small uptick on increased number of infections. But then again, we are in a relatively denser part of the state, not New York or San Francisco or Hong Kong or Tokyo or those kind of densities. But, you know, Quincy's vicinity to other communities around us. Those create exposure levels. Not to say we can't go out and do things, but again, be very mindful. I know the beaches are crowded. I know it's hot. But I mean, people are getting very creative how to get things done in their lives and try to be conscious of people around you. And the travel restrictions are in effect on August 1st. There are people coming in who need to go on a 14-day quarantine. And we have seen other people from other states come in already. For example, I watched on WCBB news, people going to Faneuil Hall from Pittsburgh, Michigan, currently a very high hotspot.
Mm-hmm.
So people try to travel to quote unquote safer places, which we now would perceive as a safe place.
Right.
But, you know, again, to put it in perspective, Hong Kong has locked down the entire city. They closed restaurants for 5 days, just actually closed everything. Takeout only, and then they discovered it created a new problem of overcongregation in the streets. So they opened breakfast and lunch again for restaurants with severe limitation how many people inside, and closed all nighttime activities. So no nightclubs, no bars, not too different from here. But in their case, there are over 7+ million people there. They only had about 100+ cases pop up, and they shut the place down.
Wow.
That's how infectious this disease is. And they've already started the field hospital. Hong Kong has built a field hospital now.
Okay.
Experts from Wuhan, China has now come into Hong Kong to help with testing. So while people here seem to think, some people here think that they can be relaxed and relaxed because the numbers are small. Other places have already proceeded very, very severe lockdown processes despite what you would consider small numbers because of the just in crazy level of infection speed that this disease has got.
Yeah, I know we're hearing more now here about community spread rather than nursing homes, assisted living centers. So it's more younger people now that are spreading it.
It's always been young people. I think that's been kind of overlooked. I think it's the idea that they're kind of invulnerable, which they're not. There are plenty of new stories going on. Being severely here and dying, and there's also stories about chronic conditions associated with recovery. So the symptoms can pass, but now you're still in recovery mode, and that's part of what's going on.
Yeah.
So I mean, just because you go to worse of it doesn't mean your body is still trying to get over being ravaged by the disease. We've always suspected for a long time that the asymptomatic carriers most likely people that are on the age 30. And that is definitely proven to be true.
Yeah.
And it's not uniquely in the U.S.
Yeah, that's why there's such a concern with the, you know, the college kids coming back soon.
Yeah, I was on a call of a National Conference State Legislators Asian Caucus, one of the task force committees I'm on now, about other states, and particularly people in Texas and Oklahoma, Michigan. I'm very concerned about the infectious spread. I was on a call conference as a state government, so it's a conference of national relations. I can't remember which one, but we listen to people out of Oklahoma, and they're definitely opening colleges, and they're allowing everybody to come back, and they're coming in from neighboring states primarily. And places like Texas in particular, the hotspots, because they can see, you know, generally where the students are coming from in a general sense. And realizing that they're going to have a problem as they come in. And you heard about the COVID parties. I mean, intentionally getting infected. I mean, really?
It goes beyond comprehension.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, what's your risk tolerance for this? So it is getting very bizarre. Well, the rest of the world responds very rapidly because of fear of spread and massive casualties. Certain parts of the United States doesn't seem to be nearly as concerned as they should, which I am finding very troubling.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Jackie, appreciate your time. Always good to see and talk with you.
Absolutely, Joe. And I wish you a good rest of the week. We shall speak again, hopefully very soon, now that the formal sessions have recessed for August. We'll have a bit more time.
Sounds good. Thanks again. Be well.
You too. Take care.